Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the SmackDown Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of SmackDown. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review SmackDown, but also Raw, NXT, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, bloody premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hampton to review Friday night SmackDown. And what do you make of this week's show?
Rubbish. Oh. Piss poor. Dreadful. Monday Night Raw, but worse. All of these synonyms for SmackDown continues to be this way. I am going to highlight, as we go through this review, the things I earnestly enjoyed, nay, loved about this show, because it did have them. It really did have them. This was a bad episode of what has been for a while now, in my opinion, a bad wrestling show. So much so that I feel like I'm saying this as if it's going to scorch the earth. Who's that, like, I forget his name, and I don't want you to name it when you remember it, so it'll be a bad dickhead you enjoy listening to that does all the hot take stuff, who like says things just to be contrary. I can't remember his name, but that guy, the Unleashed one, this is not a bit, I can't remember the guy. Yeah. But like, I feel like at this point, doing all that sort of, listen, guys, I got to tell you, like, SmackDown ain't it anymore. Like, it's not been it for so long. I don't watch this with the expectation that it might be. We don't preview it on a Friday with absolutely nothing to preview, expecting it to be good. Like, it's that gag, isn't it, about the low expectations? Like, but you managed it. It continues to fall below very low expectations. WWE gets away with it. Because it's Rumble week, baby! I'm hyped as you can get for a WWE pay-per-view. Not because of this show.
And I have a feeling this show is probably going to take off following the Rumble, because then we'll all be on the home straight to, one would assume, Reigns versus Lesnar at WrestleMania.
Probably, yeah.
But, like you say, it did feel a bit like they were treading water. Although, even though we all knew which way this show was heading, I did like the consequences of the opening segment, basically. We'll talk about it.
All right.
We'll see. So we started, of course, with the Bloodline. They had a big recap of what's been going on with Reigns and Rollins and the Usos, including the Usos attacking Rollins on Raw last week. Usos are in the ring. They celebrate the fact that Roman Reigns has been holding the Universal title for 508 days. No former champions have ever done that. Not Kevin Owens, not Seth freaking Rollins, not Brock Lesnar. And they do this big introduction for Roman Reigns, who comes out. Oh, I love this opening segment. I saved about 10 minutes watching this. I was like, yeah. Gets a bit with Roman coming out.
You know, right. I'm sorry to cut you off. I don't know at this point if that's good analysis or bad. Like, obviously, your gut feeling is, oh, they're saying, like, great, because you can fast forward parts of this wrestling show. But I think there's a real point underneath this. It's like, there is so much content to consume, especially coming out of WWE, that if you, it's like a life hack.
Yeah.
It's like WWE life hacks. Well, SmackDown has very long entrances. Raw has highlight packages. So they become these little hacks that help you defeat the, that's not how you're supposed to like approach the chosen art that you enjoy. It's like, well, imagine like going to the museum and like seeing this fast pass where you can just skim past the pictures without learning about the history. I can't wait. We can be out of this place in 10 minutes. There's a point there. There is a point there. Like, make content not so disposable that you don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's
the reason why I skip forward is I know that you're not going to go, well, talk about what happened when he was walking down to the ring.
Yeah.
It's just going to be 2 minutes of him.
Oh, he's put his finger in there. Oh, one of these has done a face. He's holding that belt up a long time. At least when like Paul Heyman was there, it was like, look at Paul Heyman doing a thing.
The only thing I did like, and it was at the end of the entrance, was Reigns doing his hand out for the mic and Jim Uso just not paying any attention to him. Which I'm clutching at straws or maybe even breadcrumbs because I'm like, something's going on here.
I'm not telling you there's a chance, but it does hearken like one of my favourite subgenres of remember Third Eye on Soccer AM?
Yeah.
Like wrestling Third Eyes of people no-selling high fives and not even realising it.
Yeah.
Like it's great watching the wrestler go, their face just drops when they're all like trying to style it out. Like, so they'll, like, put the high five up, it gets completely missed, and then they just ball their fist and, like, try to say, yeah, we were just celebrating the whole time.
So Reigns does the whole Nashville, acknowledge me. Crowd bloody loves it. They do a video package showcasing 508 days of Roman Reigns as champion, beating Owens, Daniel Bryan, Edge, Cesaro, Mysterio, Cena, Balor, Lesnar, etc., etc. Looking very pleased themselves as this video finishes. Seth Rollins interrupts just as Roman Reigns is about to speak. Pat McAfee, who was on one, just yells, "You son of a bitch!" out comes Rollins. He's impressed as well by Roman Reigns' package. And he says, look, it's no party without me being here. Well, what's this party for? Maybe we're celebrating Roman Reigns' record-breaking title reign that's about to come to an end. He says, look, I pointed out, Roman, last week that you had everything handed to you. I meant it on a meta level. But you took it so bloody seriously. You had to send your cousins to do your dirty work on Monday Night Raw. Like, if you had a message for me, Roman, all you had to do is text. He's getting under his skin at this point. And he says, hey, let's not forget about the Usos in all this. They're the ones who make everything that you do possible. It's just like me and Mox did when we were in the Shield for you.
Do not Seth freaking Rollins, do not mox me just because we're all very pleased to see Moxley back. Do not mox me when last year Dean was apparently taking food off my table. Don't come out here and mox me. I'm going to praise Seth Rollins later on for something on this show, but I did not care. You cannot have it both ways. Yeah. You can't.
But yes, he's dropping hints and... one of the Usos is just ready to kick his ass, and the other one, maybe he's taking a little bit of this in. Mm. Who knows? Reigns responds by just taking the piss, saying, what did John Cena write that promo for you? Everything handed to me, etc., etc. He said, look, I know you bang on about these, but the match between you and I at the Rumble, you know that's going to be just a straight-up singles match. I don't need the Usos. And Rollins says, all right then, well, if that's the case, how about I find a partner, I fight the Usos with that partner later, and if my team wins, the Usos are banned from ringside at the Royal Rumble. And Reigns sort of hesitates, and Jey Uso, who's been getting a bit knocked by this whole thing, would also taking a little bit in, accepts the challenge on Roman's behalf and says, doesn't matter, you're not going to be able to find a partner anyway. And Rollins says, yeah, about that. Kevin Owens' music hits. Snap, crackle, huge bap for him. and Reigns says, no, I'm the one who makes the decisions. It's not official until I say it's official. All right, you can have that match. If you beat the Usos, they're banned from ringside at the Royal Rumble. But if the Usos win, you lose that title shot at the Royal Rumble, and I'm going on vacation. And yeah. Rollins eventually agreed and wandered off with his best friend, who we'll meet up with again in a bit.
I mean... on this podcast, we have several times actually complimented the writing's effort and I guess Roman's, in his performance, his effort to protect the integrity of the Roman Reigns character. It's one thing to be a heel, it's one thing to be a dominant champion. It's quite another to maintain that idea that you're the smartest person in the room. It's also okay to get fooled once in a while, because everybody does. That's normal human behavior, so long as about 90% of the time you're across everything. Going to be the head of the table, you've got to. He had to spot that Paul Heyman maybe wasn't quite on the up and up.
Yeah,
you know? And when he did, things got edgy and things got testy. So I had faith in this main event that Roman Reigns wouldn't do the stupidest possible thing, because that's just not in his character. But more on that later.
And when we came back from the break, Happy Corbin, Madcap Moss are in the ring. They're talking about the run that they've been on. Madcap Moss beating Kofi Kingston last week, killing Drew McIntyre as well prior to that. Madcap Moss had a joke about if Kofi, and obviously with King Woods not being there, if Kofi started a Garth Brooks cover band, he'd sing Friends in No Places. I mean, the poo day level was not reached here.
Poo? We didn't talk about poo, did we? That was Paul Sidgwick's week on SmackDown.
I put it over. I said it was one of the best jokes he's ever told. Poo day.
It's a poo day. Yes, it is.
So this wasn't quite up to that level. But, you know, it's Royal Rumble season. It's the one time of the year that stars from
the other shows can show up.
Because Kofi brought out Big E to stand ringside for his match against Madcap Moss.
Same angle, two segments in a row. We pick on this whenever we can. I know WWE just isn't held to standards anymore, but this is pretty ridiculous that they did this back-to-back.
They carpooled, probably.
With the opening segment with the guys from Raw. Did they even on commentary? I didn't pick up quarterly brand-to-brand invitational.
No, so they just said...
Royal Rumble fever.
They said
it?
It's Royal Rumble season, so yeah. People can show up on other shows.
This is going to sound very Kofi Kingston crushing the pancakes. However, I quite like that Big E, who I believe last week you toasted the anniversary of the Goldberg promo.
Indeed.
Goldberg isn't doing that lately.
Yeah.
He's pissed off that he's lost his WWE title.
Because he's winning the Rumble, this is why.
Well, you know, it's okay to be optimistic because he at least is making you believe that. I think that either they're working on something with him or he is performing something with the hope of willing it into existence.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I don't think that is wasted energy. I'm not seeing happy-go-lucky Big E, because right now, what's he got to be happy-go-lucky about?
But I can also see him, you know, in the group chat, in the New Day Poo Day group chat, you know, Xavier Woods is like, sorry, lads, I'm out for a bit with an injury. Kofi, you're sort of on your own on Friday nights. And after what happened last week...
Oh, 100%.
He goes, well, I can pop over.
Yeah.
I'm allowed now, seeing as it is Royal Rumble season.
Big E, big friend of us, big friend of the channel. I wouldn't want to, like, ask him to violate his best mate's trust, but if he wants to send us a screenshot of their group chat that's been renamed Poo Day, I welcome that at Michael Hamflett.
So then we got the match. It was Madcap Moss against Kofi Kingston. Back and forth affair early on. I do really think Madcap Moss has got something about him.
It's not his attire.
No, but look at him, first of all. And you can tell that he's going to probably go far within this company. But also, I don't know. I don't know whether it's just that bit where he goes to tackle someone in the corner and takes a really rough bump off the turnbuckle every time. And you look at it in slow motion, and it is safe, but he doesn't half throw himself into it.
He was a football guy, wasn't he? So yeah. I don't know what our American listeners would have to tell us, whether or not his position marries up with what he does in the ring, but we just associate that with throwing yourself into tackles and letting your bodies fly everywhere. So, back and forth is as WWE as it gets at this point, isn't it? Because everything is back and forth. Everything follows the same beat. And Madcap Moss, if he has got potential beyond that, he has got very good luck. You're right, his body is good. I'm not seeing it because I feel like it's been stifled out of him by this sort of formula stuff. I'm yet to see a single Madcap Moss match that I would want to watch again. This included.
Do you know what the football team he played for was called?
Go on.
So he tried out for the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm. Fins up.
Famous Ace Ventura football team, hence why they're Phil Chambers' favourites.
Right.
But he played for the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Oh. Hang on now. Obviously, we were thinking, you and I were both thinking Minnesota Vikings there, don't we? Our limited knowledge of American football. Are they at the collegiate level? Because college football is big, isn't it? Oh, what have you found?
Sorry, college football, University of Minnesota, as you said. You probably figured this out by now, but I've just found a picture of their mascot.
Oh, here we go.
Goldie Gopher.
What's he got on his hand, Wilbon? Can you describe that for our listeners in, I don't know, pick a catchphrase out of thin air? How would you describe what he's wearing on his Wikipedia picture? If you go to, what's he called? Goldie Gopher. What would you describe to our listeners that he is wearing on his paw? What kind of ring?
A beautiful
diamond ring. I'm just reading more about Goldie Gopher here.
He's snowboarding down some steps there.
Yep.
Yep.
That was at a women's volleyball game, of course.
Oh, God, yeah. Goldie Gopher gets about.
Right, anyway, back to the match. It looks like Kofi Kingston might win. He's hit a boom drop. He's setting up the trouble in paradise. But, of course, Happy Corbin causes a distraction. That allows Moss to take over. Chuck Kingston out to the floor. Tries to throw him into the steps. Kingston jumps over them. Jumps over the steps. And Happy Corbin coming back to take out Moss. And Big E chucks Happy Corbin into the steps to take us into a break. When we come back, Kingston's in control. Moss fights back, though. His spine buster stomps Kingston in the corner. Throws Kingston back into it as he drags him out. But then Kingston runs up it, hits a Hurricane Rana onto Riddick Moss. I was about to call him. Who's that? Madcap Moss. Moss slams him down, and then suddenly, as he runs off the ropes, Madcap Moss, Kingston hits the Trouble in Paradise out of nowhere for the victory. Post-match, Big E gets in, offers Happy Corbin to come in and save his mate, and when he doesn't, just nails Moss with a big ending, just to really put that exclamation point on it.
All I could think about in this, and maybe this is fine, actually, was trying to, and I haven't arrived at this yet, so don't ask me, trying to work out how they use Madcap Moss's gimmick to feed into Kofi's elimination escape this year.
Mm.
They're feuding, effectively. Like, is Madcap Moss going to be on the apron? Cody's going to be thrown over the top rope and then uses his braces to get back in the ring or something. Like, is Madcap...
Oh, yeah.
Is Madcap Moss going to...
Oh, I like that, and it springs back onto his nipples.
Yeah.
Oh, my nips!
He'll be in the rumble, he'll be fine, fine, fine. Stop looking at Goldie Gopher.
In 1985, a fierce-looking mega rodent appeared with a barrel chest, clown feet, and sinister eyes. This look didn't last long, and Goldie soon again became a lovable, friendly character. So he turned heel briefly in 1985.
Give us that description again.
A mega rodent, yeah. Barrel chest, yeah. Clown feet, sinister, yeah. Eyes.
I mean, that's like pretty much Vincent Mann's description of the Iron Sheik character, and he was at WrestleMania 1 in 1985.
The gopher of the 70s and 80s was comparable in appearance to a teddy bear, a favourite of children and grandmothers.
Minnesota, did you say? Mm-hmm. They're going to work Minnesota. Goldie Gopher sounds like he's part of Madcap Moss's entourage. It's the alliteration thing, isn't it? He's going to be there.
September 23rd, Goldie Gopher's birthday, Goldie Gopher Day. Supposedly, if someone wants to rub Goldie's front teeth, it'll bring him good luck. 95 grand they spent on a statue. I need to find this statue now.
The 23rd of September, did you say?
Uh-huh.
This could be, we might have uncovered the most LTST law moment in this podcast history, and there has been plenty, has there not?
Goldie Gopher that statue.
Oh, man, I was so close. We nearly had this.
Have you seen this statue?
What?
Hey. Me chilling on the lettering.
On an M. I thought for a second Goldie Gopher's birthday was the original Rusev Day, but it was 3 days out. September 26th was the original Rusev Day. And I was like, well, maybe that's why Vince thinks it's a comedy gimmick. Because so I'll just give you the same birthday as a gopher. Why?
He lost out to Zippy, who's the kangaroo mascot of Zippy Marsupial, University of Akron.
Hang on. Zippy the Marsupial. Instead of Skippy the kangaroo.
He has got the cold, dead eyes of a killer.
Tweet it, man. Listen, podcasts are an audio medium. People do not listen to, like, listen to us chuckling along at your Google image searches, because believe me, we will chuckle. You're going to have to tweet these with the podcast. Underneath, thread them. Goldie Gopher, Zippy the Marsupial... And
so that's just a cartoon there of two American football players running down to tackle a kangaroo.
Where that guy?
Who's this guy?
What have we got here?
Jesus, what's he been taking? Hang on, sorry, I realised we will get back. There's Pistol Pete.
Pistol Pete.
Yeah, I've seen Pistol Pete. Right, next. Purdue Pete.
Purdue Pete. The Purdue Boilermakers.
That's number three. Clemson Tigers.
What's it called?
He's had a weekend, hasn't he? And
the Nittany Lion.
Have they run out of money? Anyway. Yeah, Kofi won.
Yeah.
Cool. We got a recap of Aaliyah and Natalya from last week and the 3.17 second record-breaking victory. And in the midst of all this, they also introduced WWE legend Summer Rae sitting at ringside, which apparently riled a lot of people up on social media.
What? I didn't see this grief, but we were talking about this in the office this morning. What do you expect exactly WWE to bill its returning wrestlers as? Do you want to be like, sort of like, also ran Total Divas Season 3 star, who we didn't really push, briefly the ex of Rusev. It's Summer Rae.
Has she brought the fish with her?
Yeah, aye, like, aye. Stop being dicks, everybody. And they're attempting a bit of LTST. You know, to be fair, Summer Rae and Natalya, they're like clinging on to something there, dropping a little hook for the Royal Rumble. Innocent enough. Leave them all alone.
Yeah. I mean, the match itself was crap, but...
Yeah, it was useless.
They at least tried to be like, oh, Natalya says it should be her world record because she's the one who got pinned.
I mean, you know, this action peaked at 3 minutes, 3.17 seconds.
Yes. This match went 2 minutes, arguably, or 2 minutes, 9 seconds, according to my notes here. Arguably, 2 minutes and 6 seconds, too long. Yeah, Natalya jumps Aaliyah to start off the match. Aaliyah rolls her up, gets a near fall. Natalya fights back, discus lariat, that gets her a near fall. And then she gets DQ'd for kicking too much ass. Wouldn't stop stomping on Natalya in the corner. And who should make the save? Not Summer Rae, but a returning Xia Li!
She's back from working out shows with Natalya. Here, people are barking up the wrong tree with this Natalya thing. Everybody has seen that she keeps mentioning that she's a Guinness World Record holder, and then you have a match time thing like that, and everybody says, oh, that's handy, Royal Rumble season, when in-ring, they're missing the point. Well, go on. They're looking at the wrong bit. They're seeing world record. I'm seeing Guinness, who returned just last night on the World GCW, Hornswoggle. Who was killed by one of Natalya's farts? Hornswoggle. Who's going to be sat there backstage? Oh, I got a package from Guinness for breaking a world record. What have they sent me? Free Guinness. And she's going to go and open the box. All the Guinness is gone. And then a pissed Hornswoggle in the middle of the Women's Royal Rumble, which he's been in before, yeah. LTST, is going to stagger out. He's going to have a Guinness moustache around himself. All that. Then Natalya's going to be like, you drank all my Guinness. And then Summer Rae is going to leap up behind her and tip her over the top rope.
Fantastic.
Why are people booking? Why are people lazily going to Times for their Rumble booking when it's right there in front of you? Come on, WWE. Do the Guinness bit.
Pat McAfee continued his wild night by talking about how stupendous a two-night WrestleMania is going to be.
A lot of people talking about how stupendous this WrestleMania is going to be, isn't there?
They've really gone in for it. And he just read out other words for stupendous and Cole thought it bloody hilarious.
They put big time on the WrestleMania 22 logo. I want them to put stupendous on this one.
I'll give him this. That Peter Gabriel song's an absolute banger.
Oh, it was
banger.
Fantastic. But try
I'm
and imagine.
On my way, I'm making it.
We're 6 days out from WrestleMania and... Bloody Roman Reigns has stood there staring down number one contender Stone Cold Steve Austin and he's going to have to say like the ass whipping I lay on you is going to be stupendous and that's the bottom line.
And you can have like Randy being like stupendous, not stupid. Anyway, he lost the Thorias versus Viking Raiders who were a lot of matches on this show where you could tell which result was coming here.
Yes. Real, Lost Lotharios. Like a real AEW flavor to it, but that would be a lie.
Lost Lotharios versus the new number one contenders, the Viking Raiders. And they just battered him, basically. Eric chucked Ivar into Humberto. They did have a brief flurry, a blind tag to Angel. Double basement dropkick gets him a near fall. Eric fights back, though, hits Humberto with a knee. Ivar comes in, runs wild, hit a spinning heel kick. Every time he just does something that you're like, you're not supposed to do that. It still gets me.
If so you watch it, there. You watch it like you're Brock seeing Keith Lee. Come on, oh, big boy.
Yeah. And then Eric got both of them, sort of powerbomb and world's strongest slam position, slammed them down. Viking experience on Humberto. Yeah, straightforward victory for the number one contenders.
Too straightforward for me, Jeff. They can't tell stories. So you just get this, that you already know what was going to happen. You've been told it from the week before. Especially now at Rumble season, as you say, like a lot of stuff feels on pause, doesn't it? Impossible to care. Impossible to care.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, I'll tell you what you care about, and it came next, and it is the continued screw job of Naomi by Sonya Deville. As mentioned last week, they're going to run it back, Charlotte Flair versus Naomi, sort of championship contenders match, and they come down and set up, and then just before the match can begin, Sonya Deville, to be fair, correctly kicks Lil Nate, Charles Robinson, out of these job as referee of this match and takes his shirt off. I felt certain they were going to say to Charles Robinson, yeah, don't put an undershirt on underneath that referee mm-hmm. shirt, as we can see. You tell me, but yeah. Thankfully he did. And Sonya Deville assumed the position of referee. Naomi sort of rolls her eyes and goes, yep, cool, figures. I did like the bit where she was like, oh, for f-. And Charlotte just went out of the way, Sonya, and just absolutely forearm Naomi's head off. She batters Naomi, chops. Naomi does fight back and kick her in the head, but Flair just grabs her, puts her in the Boston Crab. Naomi tries to escape. Flair puts on the figure four leg lock. I like the bit where Sonya Deville was effectively stood between Naomi and the ropes going, what are you going to do, eh?
Yeah.
But she fights out of it. She kicks Flair off. Flair knocks into Deville, who spills out to the floor. Then as she's recovering on the outside, Sonya Deville, that is, Flair goes at Naomi, who hits her with the rear view and gets the visible, well, six count, I think Michael Cole said on commentary. But Deville gets in. Naomi's shouting at her, of course, for screwing her out of it. That allows Flair to attack, put her in the figure eight. And before Naomi can even attempt to get to the ropes or submit, Sonya Deville calls to the bell. Pat McAfee drops a Bret Hart reference and surprise, surprise, this thing rolls on. But as much as I was like, oh, figures, yeah, here we go again, I do like it that they are just continuously screwing Naomi, and even the authority figures are now like, yeah, it's kind of out of order, that.
Yeah. The match was nothing because it couldn't be, because it was the backdrop to the angle. You know,
had a great match a few weeks back.
Angle more than a match. It couldn't compete with that one, could it? What year did you see that Goldie Gopher? Like, you know, 1985.
That was when he became a heel, I think,
right,
for a year.
Same week that Sonya Deville and Naomi's feud started. I just cannot take any more of this. There was a network exclusive after the show, because we do the work at What Culture, and I watch those two, where Sonya Deville was on the phone to somebody panicking. We don't know who that somebody was, saying, I don't know how this has happened. I don't know what's going to, like, what I'm going to do about this. Like, jump ahead, sorry, about the match
yeah.
they're going to have, which we've had advertised before, by the way. Like, this is a repeated story mm-hmm. beat. Sonya Deville doesn't know what she's going to do. Like, why put yourself in that position in the first place? What did you expect was going to be the consequences from 100 million weeks of screwing with somebody? I just wish this all wasn't so thick, because I like most of the... I like Naomi and Deville. I want better for them. Mm. And this feels super, super played. My daft... silly fantasy booking idea from Friday's preview, go back and listen to it every podcast if you want to, might yet still come true
mm-hmm.
about what Sonya Deville's doing, if not here at the Royal Rumble. It's just so played out, man. So played out.
Yeah, get to the point with that question. We're backstage with... Hi, Kyla! Who's chatting with best friends, Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. She asks a question to Seth, thinking is this a good idea to risk it all for this? And Kevin Owens answers the questions for him, after asking if that's okay, of course. It says, look, I'd be Universal Champion. I'd be the one breaking records if it wasn't for the Usos. And the thought of them doing something like what they did to him, to Seth Rollins, that tears him up inside. It's his best friend. And, you know, Rollins is really happy that Owens has been going to therapy or whatever and has become an honest man now. He says, look, the stakes are huge, but the reward is worth the risk. And he says, look, one-on-one, we always know what happens when I face Roman Reigns. And we just got to do that tonight. And he walks off and then Owens goes, I better go and head off and prep with my best friend.
Love it. Love them. Love this. Don't care that elements of it are, never mind, borrowed, outright stolen from the Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho friendship, because I love that too.
Someone tweeted us on the news today saying, oh, do you think Owens is going to cost Rollins at the Rumble? I said, I hope not. I want them to win tag titles at WrestleMania.
Yeah, this has got a long way to travel. With it being WrestleMania season, the easy thing to look at is I'll split them up before that and you do the singles match and fine. Like, they've had a pretty good WrestleMania match in the empty performance center, if you remember. Owens jumps off a thing. But I'm not in any mood for this to stop. Like, it's, they're kind of...
No rush for them to get to whatever's next for these two.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because they're either just getting going or they're heating up to split them up and it's never going to get to maybe them sticking at it. But really, do we need Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens in singles programs anytime soon?
No.
Like, the roster always feels bloated. If anything, you're kind of taking them out of that chase to do something new for a change. And you can see that for the first time in ages for both of them, they look and feel creatively fulfilled by this. This promo would never generate conversation on a review of one of these WWE shows if it's just your standard Common Our Garden and tonight in this very ring, blah, 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 blah. But they're inserting all the little touches. Like, the My Best Friend stuff is still funny. Like, they know that that's a killer line at the moment. Owens getting on the plane on the off chance that Seth needed help because he remembers that the Usos screwed him is, like, decent.
Yeah.
Like, an attempt at least to adhere to something that's happened before. A decent attempt at continuity. So, yeah, like, I like this a lot.
And we've pointed out on numerous occasions, there's not exactly many other, no offence to the Viking Raiders, tag teams queuing up to take those titles off the Usos.
Not ones that can, jumping ahead a little bit, not ones that can have, considering what the finish was going to be, like, a pretty good match.
I love that main event, like, until the finish.
All four of them, like, went full beans on it, knowing that that was going to be the ending. Mm. Like, I think that was almost a bit of a statement from Owens and Rollins that we're in this for the long haul, if you're willing to give us it.
This was a show packed with WWE legends. Next up, we saw Kid Rock sitting at ringside.
Can we talk about the big legend? Can we talk about the main musical headliner act of the show, because it isn't Kid Rock?
Is it that country star whose name I forgot to write down?
Well, I mean, I can spell it for you.
Okay, no, it's not that one I'm thinking of. I also thought it was interesting they had Kevin Owens talking about Seth Rollins and his best mate and, you know, them teaming up together. And then immediately followed, effectively, by Sami Zayn's segment. Sami Zayn, the only man who can make this work, basically. He comes out, it's another episode of Inzane, and he talks about the fact that Johnny Knoxville first gained fame through testing self-defense weapons on himself. And once again, he's going to prove anything Johnny can do, he can do better. He can be more of a jackass, basically. And he starts off with a stun gun, one that can, on its highest setting, put down a rhinoceros, in his words. He turns it to the first setting and then holds it near his leg. And an electricity sound effect goes off and he goes, oh, that's smart.
The PA, man.
It's literally like that. He does it to the next level and he goes, oh, let's crack this one up. Let's do straight to the heart. And it says this put Knoxville down properly. And it does knock him off his feet, but he's still like, oh! Oh, goodness me.
Oh, there.
Boy. And he's just about to go for the big finish when the infamous Jackass theme plays and out comes Johnny Knoxville to a hero's reception, it's fair to say. He's not happy with Sami Zayn mocking his career and taking everything that he's worked for, in the words of Nate Diaz, I think. Mm-hmm. And he says, look, you don't think you're really doing this right? Let me have a look. Oh, someone's forgot to turn the stun gun on. Don't worry. I've turned it on now. Let's test it for you. And again, the electricity sound effect plays with the speakers, but this time we'll just pretend that Sami Zayn has been electrocuted by Johnny Knoxville, puts him down, Sami Zayn can barely move. Johnny Knoxville says, hey, come on, guys. Let's help the man up. He helps him up. He sort of taps him on the cheek. You're all right, pal. Props him up against the ropes. And then he says, see you at the Rumble. Hoys him over the top rope. I love this feud end to the Rumble.
Yeah, me too. I'm big into Johnny Knoxville and Sami Zayn as a mini program for the Rumble. The movie's coming out first week of February, so it genuinely could be, the whole thing could be peaking at the Rumble to promote the movie to never be seen again. But it is WrestleMania season, so celebrities being around, they could be.
And they always wanted a jackass match.
They did. Like, this might be them getting that out of the system. Not to jump ahead a little bit here, you've covered everything in a way, there's not much. It's really daft, funny, physical comedy that I recommend people, if they just listen to this to find out what happened on SmackDown, go back and give this a watch. It's quite fun. Sami Zayn really puts gusto into this. Like, jumping ahead slightly, Eric Bischoff is going to appear later on.
Yep.
And I just wish that, like in 2002, like they'd done the reveal of the Justice of the Peace makeup coming off. Because I loved him coming out here and saying, in my career, the Drew Mackie.
I just say 3 minutes. Let me put the difficulty setting up on the stern gun.
I wish they'd seen him take the makeup off again before, but you see him here in his Justice of the Peace gear coming out and throwing Sami Zayn out the ring, and then you see him 10 minutes later. Nah, look, everybody gets old. It's absolutely fine, and there's nothing wrong, at least.
Wears it well, doesn't he, Knoxville?
He does, you know, and like, it's hard to wear watching NXT 2.0 well. And he does it. He does do it. Look, I can take the piss all I want. I'm the oldest man at What Culture, and I'm going to be paying money to see his films. Like, he always wins.
So then we got, actually, Eric Bischoff backstage with Postman Pierce, encouraging him to be more definitive, let's say, when it comes to his management of Friday Night SmackDown in particular. He's giving him some advice, basically. In comes Sonya Deville, a little bit sheepishly. She didn't realize that Bischoff was here, et cetera, et cetera. Postman Pierce said, I think you did kind of cross the line, to be honest, tonight. This stuff between you and Naomi has to stop. So you know what? Next week, you, Sonya Deville, that's who you are, versus Naomi, one-on-one. Eric Bischoff loves this new management style coming from Postman Pierce. And like you say, Sonya Deville looks a little bit concerned. She hasn't quite got a scheme going yet.
Couple of quick things on this. Eric Bischoff, he's got a ranch, hasn't he? He lives in Wyoming. My American geography is not amazing, but Wyoming and Tennessee, and not like Wisconsin, should I say. Is it Wisconsin? Anyway.
Nashville, though.
Wyoming is a state as well, I think. God, this is embarrassing. Wyoming is a state. During lockdown, you know, I learned all the 50 states.
Did you?
Just, I forgot them all already. All those skills that you could pick up when you've got nothing else to do but like stare at the wall and scream. So Wyoming.
We'll always have Rocket League.
We'll always have Rocket League. Wyoming and Tennessee are not like 5 minutes away. And I know Bischoff can fly a plane, but is this like, why was he there?
You should mention that more.
Is this a longer term thing? Like, is he going to come in and like, who watches The Watchmen? Eric Bischoff. Like, I've stolen that from Fiend's mind. This tweet has really made me laugh. But like, is this sort of an internal moderation system going on within the corridors of power of
the GMM, General Manager Manager?
Yeah, like the assistant to the General Manager. Like, is he going to come in and just get on Postman Pierce's shoulder and say, "Look, you need to"? And then when Postman Pierce does something bad, get in Sonya Deville's ear and say, "Look," and then he kind of takes over the role. He has been negging Tony Khan quite a lot on for clicks and stuff lately. And, you know, maybe that's gone down well in Titan. Maybe they're liking that.
Yeah.
Because why was he? There was no explanation, was there?
I mean, like, all the other legends sort of made sense.
Yeah.
Kid Rock aside. Well,
Tennessee. He's a Tennessee guy, isn't he, I think? Like, so.
Hopefully. I love Bischoff.
I like him. I think he's a great performer. I would welcome him back on screen for more than just one of those Legends parties.
Oh, I hope we get one of those soon.
Yeah, we're missing one of them.
Then we got Sheamus versus Ricochet. Ridge Bloody Holland back at ringside for Sheamus. This was sort of a condensed, crappier version of the match that they've had before. I'll admit, I love watching Sheamus beat up Ricochet. And I love Ricochet as well. One-armed tilt-a-whirl backbreaker early on. That popped me and the commentary team quite rightly. Ricochet hits a standing drop kick. Sheamus hits the Irish curse backbreaker. Ricochet dodges the brogue kick, drop kicks off the middle turnbuckle, goes for a suicide dive to the outside. Sheamus sees it coming and just nails him with a jumping knee. Gets back into the ring, and then, especially for Ridge Bloody Holland, hits him with a brogue kick and gets a victory in around sort of 3 minutes.
I have to say, the match the other week was pretty good for a WWE TV match, but it also ended definitively, as did this one. Does like Ricochet eliminate Sheamus? Because I can't remember another Royal Rumble where Ricochet was involved in a pretty big elimination that led to absolutely jack in spite of what everybody thought. So, like, is that the play here? Like, Sheamus has really...
Well, it didn't lead to jack shit. It led to a very brief Saudi Arabia.
Well, I was going to say, it led to worse than jack shit. It led to flying all the way over there to be buried in jack shit. Like, does this lead to them saying, in the Rumble, Sheamus has really had Ricochet's number lately, and then Ricochet eliminates him.
Bro, so kick, over the top rope.
So they can have another TV match that goes, it's matches to build matches, and it only ever gets worse.
But if it's matches to fill time, and it's got Ricochet and Sheamus in it, as much as it's not as good as the last match they had, I thought, I do just like watching these two work.
We had Sheamus and Ridge Bloody Holland versus Ricochet and Sheamus. Ricochet and Cesaro,
yeah.
It's just a lot of it, isn't it? A lot of the same.
But Ricochet is just very good at taking a brogue kick, basically.
He is very good at taking a brogue kick. He is. I just think, I was a bit... I'd had my fill.
Yeah.
Cody Andrade having four matches. Not Cody Andrade. But Cody and Aleister Black having four matches. And it's like, but at least that was over an 8-week period. I've had four in January off these.
Right. I think that's it. I think it's just main event time now, isn't it?
What?
Nothing missed out, is there?
What?
Oh, yes, sorry. Rick Boogs, who's had a haircut.
Yes.
Looks more like bloody Rick Rude even more now. Shinsuke Nakamura, they're walking backstage, and who should they bump into? Jeff Bloody Jarrett.
That's J-double-F. J-A-double-R-E-double-T. Working that GCW 24 hours after the WWE. Because there is nobody better than Jeff Jarrett in this game. Is that maybe Kevin Nash? There are levels to this.
He is so good. He's got to be in the Rumble.
What was so great about this, right? So obviously he's left WWE. He's going out alone. He's better than The Undertaker ever was for GCW. Don't at me or do because I'm right. Coming in as the Last Outlaw and dressing like The Shield. And even when he gets the call from WWE, we're in your hometown. What does he do? He doesn't try and sell the GCW gimmick. No, that's the indie thing. He comes in his Hall of Fame refinery.
Yes.
He'll be the exact Jeff Jarrett Vince McMahon wants him to be. Because if you're going to set up a third company, you need to keep all parties sweet. Jeff Wrestling 2023. I love this man. I love, he worked, for those that don't care about indie wrestling or anything, last night, he worked a reasonably well-publicised GCW match on a show that had a lot of buzz in the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City, where he is playing a Last Outlaw character. He's playing a sort of dark version of himself. He wears trousers and a vest. He does actually look like what Dean Ambrose used to wear in The Shield. But the most important thing is his guitar is black. and he smashes it over losers' heads, and he's got this slowed-down, terrifying version of his. It's great, man. If you're a Jarrett guy, it's just premium content. And now I want him to be in the Rumble in his 1995 gear with those little straps.
Yeah, me too.
This was such a ludicrous cameo from one of the only people that could pull such a thing off.
I also like that the writers thought the funny thing would be him to say, who are you? And him saying, Rick Boogs. Yeah. And then him say, sorry, can you spell the name? And then we continue. The funniest part, actually, was Rick Boogs having to play his guitar so Jeff Jarrett could say, I like the way you play your guitar there. But it was an electric guitar and it wasn't plugged in. So it was I can't quite. Sorry, I'm not. Can I just sit a little bit closer? Oh, great guitar in that. You can't hear a fucking thing. I can barely hear it, and I'm next to it.
It was absolutely begging for Jarrett to be like, no, let me play. And then whips out the acoustic, wasn't it? It was begging for Boogs to just take a headshot at you.
You just got to feel like when Boogs comes out, Jarrett's going to be the next one out, isn't he?
Well, they had a
Boogs. And then Scotty Tuvalu's going to come out and play guitar and have a dance.
They had a Boogs. They had a Mucky Boogs. He was called Elias. And they did that exact spot at the Rumble 3 years ago.
So who's going to be Boogs, Jarrett, Elias, 1, 2, 3 in the Rumble?
Oh, I thought you meant final three.
I'll take it. said, if anyone's going to take this title off Roman Reigns, it's going to be Rick Boogs.
Jarrett pointing at the sign with his guitar.
right, main event time. It was the Usos versus Seth freaking Rollins and Kevin Owens. Again, if Rollins and Owens lose, then Rollins loses his shot at the Rumble. If the Usos lose, they are banned from ringside. And they had a really enjoyable match, I thought. The Usos early on used their tag team nous to isolate Seth Rollins and kick the shit out of him in the corner. He fights back, gets Jimmy into his own corner, and him and Owens work together. He hits Jimmy with a clothesline. Owens comes in, senton, knocks Jay off the apron, cannonball in the corner. The Usos, though, they regain control. Jay hits Owens with a super kick at ringside. Rollins gets the hot tag, runs wild, sends the Usos to the floor and hits a beautiful sort of wild but still sort of controlled suicide dive onto both of them to take them both out. Then following that, Rollins hit a springboard knee. That gets him a near fall. Jay fights back, hits a back suplex into a neck breaker. That gets him a two count. Rollins buckle bombs Jay, but Jimmy makes the blind tag. And they hit an assisted Samoan drop for a nice near fall too. Owens comes in, pop-up powerbomb on Jimmy Uso. That gets a two count. He climbs up top. Jimmy cuts him off. Jimmy tries to superplex him. Owens turns him into that beautiful fisherman's buster reversal that he uses. And then it's time for them all to sort of hit finishes on each other. Jimmy Uso hits Rollins with a super kick. Owens avoids the super kick from Jey Uso, hits him with a stunner, and then Jimmy catches Owens right on the chin with a super kick. That allows Rollins to recover. He hits Jimmy with a super kick himself, sets up with a stomp, looks like he's going to stomp him, pin him, job done, win the match, when in slides Roman Reigns and inexplicably Superman punches, not his cousins, to win them the match via DQ and mean he can have a vacation and not have to wrestle at the Royal Rumble. Instead, Superman punches Seth Rollins. DQ victory for Rollins and Owens. That means, of course, that the Usos are banned from ringside at the Royal Rumble. Michael Cole tries to explain that, well, Seth Rollins was about to win anyway, so he might as well have done that. Of course, it's completely bloody stupid and backwards, but an excellent main event right up until the finish, I thought.
Yeah, what a crushing disappointment of a finish for what was an otherwise tremendous main event. Owens and Rollins double teams, sort of the kind of brilliant that looked like they've been doing them together for years, which is really weird, but nice for this story that they're telling with them as the best friends, where you're fully aware that they're not really best friends, but they've got means to an end right now. And how they're putting this together in the matches is really quite impressive. A fantastic dynamic between them and the Usos, and it was really nice to watch. Is it possible that for a team that wrestle all the time and have had countless good matches, the Usos are a kind of unique kind of underrated, where you take them for granted to such a degree, like we all did with previewing the Day One match against the New Day. And it's just, you just do. You sort of default saying, it's like, well, it's New Day Usos, it's going to be great, blah, blah, blah. And then on the night, oh yeah, it was New Day Usos, it was really great, blah, blah, blah. And it's WWE, it has that effect on you where like, it's kind of a masking agent almost. And then when you see them against the team for the first time, you're like, oh, it's the Usos, man, yeah. Because you haven't quite seen them go through every bit of the playbook just yet. And I think that was one of the reasons why this match worked as well. It did the stakes for a bit, helped as well. You know, that, like, I'm not going to lie and say there wasn't, the fans weren't up for this and up for seeing it play out. And it kind of did matter. Because what Roman Reigns has done, because he's going to win at the Rumble, but what Roman Reigns has effectively done is promised us a match as boring as the Big E one at the Survivor Series. And that didn't have the Usos running in for him either. Like, I don't relish this mano-y-mano thing because, like, you kind of want a bit of that drama at the end with the Roman matches. They're starting to sag a bit. What a thick character choice. I get the impression that this is going to be one of them times that, like, Bruce Pritchard will hop on with Conrad and bollock us all for, like, maybe if you just let it play out, you'll see that it's actually going to make loads of sense in the end. It's like, yeah, but it needs to make sense now. You need to do both.
I think
next week and come out and go, like, you fans were stupid because you didn't see my grand plan. My grand plan is actually... And it's like, well, But, like, execute it in a more smart fashion in the first place, and then we might have the patience.
Yeah, the only justification for it, because there's no sense in him saying, oh, I did this deliberately, is Seth Rollins just wound him up so much over the past few weeks. He's like, you know what? I don't care if they get banned from ringside. This is the only chance I'm going to get to chin him with no repercussions, i.e. he's not going to be fresh as a daisy and be able to fight back. I just have to punch that smug smile off his face because he was... You know, taunting in the corner. There's not, you know, he's not just going to hit the stomp out of nowhere. He's hit the super kick and he's like, everyone else is down. I'm about to win. And he's like, no, bollocks. I can't handle this anymore. He's run away from me last week. He's dropped all these lines on me. He's baited me in and my cousin into putting this stipulation on. I don't care what it costs. But it's completely illogical if you're trying to make it a smart move from Roman.
You made the point at the start of this podcast that you could have been looking for things that weren't there between, like, the dissension between the Usos and Roman Reigns, right? Would this not have plugged into that? if Roman had smashed one of them in the face, and then the next week it's, you know why? It's nothing personal. But it's like, all right, fair enough, but you didn't need to smash me that hard in the face. Mm. Like, you could have pulled my leg. You know, you could have, like, you could have just tripped me up, and that would have been the DQ. And it, Roman does something excessively violent, like a spear or a Superman punch, because he wants to flex over, you know, one of the Usos. I read something in a book I was reading at the weekend, and it was by James Manos Jr., who was like somebody that worked on Sopranos for years and years and years. And he was talking about pilots, right? And it was just an excerpt from a book. And I was thinking about this quote because it was occurring to me that this has basically been the philosophy within AEW since it's existed. But I thought about it again because of your point about the Usos and how stupid this finish was. And the quote was, he was talking about pilots in television, and he said, pilots are difficult. You have to give it legs so you can say, wow, I can see where that character might go over the next 5 years. I understand what that wink means, what that one line means. You're not figuring out what's going to happen in episode 309, but you're putting enough in the petri dish so that the character can be there in episode 309. And that's the point here, isn't it? Not only was nothing put in the petri dish for why the character's going to be there next week, but you're not asked about 309, because at any given moment, a wrestler can just make a stupid decision and it not really matter.
Yeah.
And I just think that was what was so... It's nothing to do with the match. The two things were separate entities.
Yeah.
The match was one thing. It didn't have a pinfall. Most of the matches don't. The run-in was so thick that for the second week in a row at least, SmackDown has gone off the air with a Roman-Seth interaction that has been such a damp squib, that has been such a wet fart, and this was supposed to be in Shield. You know, it was supposed to be the Shield. It was with Max. It was supposed to be this thing, and it, like, they reduce it by orders of magnitude with every interaction they have.
And yet, this Friday, when they have confrontation and the Rumble's the next night, I'll be buzzing.
Oh, man, we're going to be previewing a contract signing.
I don't care.
And Seth Rollins is going to get shield bombed through the table by Roman Reigns and the Usos. I have a pasty with it. Pasty bet with you on that.
I've got too many pasties.
I'm in deep.
This weekend, yeah.
I'm up to my nuts and flakes.
Right. Well, let us know your thoughts on SmackDown on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there. You can follow all three of us. Michael Sidgwick isn't here, but you can follow him as well at MCDrick. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Myself and Sidge will be here a little bit later on to review AEW Rampage. And we'll all be back to preview Monday Night Raw a little bit later on today. But for now, this has been the SmackDown Review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.